Last year was the 60th anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education Supreme Court decision that ruled separate schools for white and black students to be unconstitutional.
That decision began a desegregation process that lasted years and brought the depths of American racism into the national spotlight. Black children received death threats and found mobs blocking their entrance into segregated schools. Armed troops had to forcibly desegregate campuses across the South.
One group of students at the center of that tense time in American history is known as the Little Rock Nine. They were the nine African-American students selected to desegregate Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. After being prevented from entering the school by a mob and the Arkansas National Guard, President Dwight Eisenhower sent the 101st Airborne to Little Rock to escort them into the school. This is a report from the time outside Central High.
This is Central High School, Little Rock, Arkansas. Troops, which for nearly 3 weeks lined the sidewalk here in front of the high school under orders to keep the colored students out, have been replaced now. And their orders to comply with the law, which means let the Negro students in if they come in.
We were Terrence Roberts, Jefferson Thomas, Thelma Mothershed, Elizabeth Eckford, Ernest Green, Carlotta Walls, Melba Patillo, Minnie Jean Brown, and Gloria Ray.
The youngest of the Little Rock Nine, Carlotta Walls Lanier, is in Wausau today. She'll be speaking at Wausau East High School tomorrow at 6:30 p.m., and she joins us now. Carlotta, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, for a long time, you didn't write or talk much about your experience at Little Rock Central High. Why not?
That's correct. Well, I'm sure it was more about how painful the time was. I wanted to just push that into the recesses of my mind and not relive those days.
It's interesting that even today you think of them as so painful, which I'm sure that they were, but your actions there, along with the aid of your cohort there, are viewed right up there with Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech and Rosa Parks not getting off the bus. Does the pain still outweigh the pride?
Well, no, I've been fortunate enough to finally get it on paper, and I have a book called A Mighty Long Way, My Journey to Justice at Little Rock Central High School. And with that, I was able to put that time, express myself more openly through this book as my memoir. So it was very cathartic for me to write the book.
Now, when most people think of the Little Rock Nine, images of the guard escorting you into school come to mind, but your journey, it started well before that. How did you decide to volunteer? How did you become one of the Little Rock Nine, one of the first African Americans to desegregate Central High in Arkansas?
Well, it really, the credit goes to my parents. The credit also goes to those black teachers that I had in elementary school and in junior high school, the community that I grew up in. I was always told that even though we were being considered second-class citizens, that we weren't, that we was just as good as the next person, that we could learn like anyone else, and in the future things were going to change, and education was the key to success. So that was my foundation, basically, that I knew that I was an equal, even though I was in a separate but equal environment.
And when you first tried to enter the school in early September of that year, you were prevented. What was that particular day like for you?
Oh, it was somewhat chaotic. The Arkansas National Guard was there to keep us out. However, we were under the impression they were there to protect the citizens of Little Rock. And I surely considered myself a citizen. My father paid taxes like everyone else, had served in World War II, had honors on the battlefield. And so it was a day of reckoning. Once we got there, we discovered that the Arkansas National Guard was really there to keep us out and not to really protect us. As far as they were concerned, to protect us, we needed to go home.
At that moment, did you realize that this was going to be maybe more than you had thought it would be in the beginning. I mean, obviously you knew this was going to be tough going in, and you knew that you would be up against some resistance. But did you realize at that point the extent of what you were going to have to find within yourself to overcome?
Well, I knew that there was a segment of people who really did not want us at the school. But I also felt that humankind would overrule some of that, and that group of people would finally probably dissipate, just move away and recognize that this was the law and they should be law-abiding citizens. And they were expressing their displeasure of us attending that particular school, but I didn't think that it would last as long as it did. I thought in a week or so that it would be over with, as far as the group that were located across the street, you know, with the name calling, with all of the derisive names, the hatefulness, the harassment, and so forth.
And when you did get to enter the school, it was, in fact, it's hard to wrap your head around any of it. We have some recordings of it, which I think give the best example, because it's even hard to describe with words what it was like. So let's listen to a little bit about that day.
Sure.
We've just got a report here on this end that the students are in. Turn the key down that way, Don. Down there. You can see from here some of the action occurring down there.
And there you were at the center of that maelstrom. What did that first day feel like once you were actually inside the building and through all of those screaming mobs?
Yeah, that was September 23rd. We didn't stay the full day. And to be honest with you, I did not see that. We had, or hear that. We had entered the school in a side door, and what you heard was someone reporting that we were inside. See, that was probably, you know, 9 o'clock that day. And I was in my third class by that time when the mob was just upset with the fact that we were inside the school. We did not stay that full day. That is when the police had to move us out of the school, and because the 17 policemen that were assigned by the mayor to, you know, protect the property and the people there at the school could not hold back over 1,000 people there.
So you were aware, even while you were in those first classes of the day, you were aware that this was going on outside?
No, I was aware that the mob was there. I was not aware of all of... I was not aware of students jumping out of windows, leaving the school, that sort of thing. It was not until the news in the afternoon that I saw all of that on television.
Well, take us inside the school where you were. What was it like for you on that first day?
On that first, well, that's the first day that we got in, and on September 23rd. So, because September 4th was our first day, we never got past the National Guard. September 23rd, we were in, but we were taken out by noon. I went to my classes and was assigned a seat and so forth. And I heard some, you know, nasty remarks and that sort of thing, but that was about it. So our first full day was September 25th, and that was with the 101st Airborne.
Mm. You know, high school today can be miserable enough.
Right.
Cliques and bullying without all of the added racially motivated attacks that you were going through, both
right.
inside to a certain extent and outside the school. Mm-hmm. How did you cope and handle that from day to day?
Well, I stayed above it is what I did. I refused to bring myself down to that level of ignorance. I considered them those that did not agree with me being there. They had been influenced by some of adults and parents and so forth. They had been brought up in a segregated society. They had considered themselves privileged, and that I was invading their space. The nine of us were invading their school. I considered that rather on the ignorant side, to be honest with you. And I stayed above it mentally. That's how I got through it each day. The people spitting on you, throwing rocks at you, walking on the backs of your heels, in the hallways, all of those sort of things.
Well, we're speaking right now with Carlotta Wells Lanier, the youngest member of the Little Rock Nine, the group of students that desegregated Little Rock Central High in 1957. She's also the author of the book, A Mighty Long Way, My Journey to Justice at Little Rock Central High.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for Carlotta about what it was like to go through this experience? Do you remember this era, the desegregation times in the 50s and 60s? Where were you? Were you involved somehow? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation with Carlotta Wells Lanier, the youngest member of the Little Rock Nine, the group of students that desegregated Little Rock Central High in 1957. She's in Wausau today, and she'll be speaking at Wausau East High School tomorrow at 6:30.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you remember desegregation in the 50s and 60s, watching it on TV, maybe being involved in it at the time? Do you feel like the country has come a long way since then, or is there still a lot of work to do when it comes to segregated neighborhoods or schools? And do you have a question for Carlotta Wells Lanier? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll go to our callers now. Anne is joining us from the Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Anne.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Carlotta. I just want to say thank you for everything you've done and gone through. And my question for you is, at any point did any of your fellow students or teachers or anyone in the community ever apologize for their actions or try and make amends with you later?
In the late 80s, the nine of us were, actually it was seven out of the nine, was on Oprah Winfrey's show. And Oprah has a way of finding some of those people. And they were also a part of the show, which was a surprise to us. And there was one in particular, one man in particular, that asked for forgiveness and wanted to come up and give us a hug, and which we gladly received.
What about doing...
I've had a couple of others that, you know, via email or what have you, to reach out. But as far as complete apologizing, I think that the one that was on Oprah's show was the one that I can say definitely asked for an apology.
What about during your days at Little Rock Central High? Did anyone, any of the white teacher students, reach out to you then, even in small ways?
Yes. You know, it was a reflection of our society to have a group of people who, I think, kids that and teachers that wanted to be friends, be friendlier. However, some were afraid as well to be harassed and bullied by those that were making it very miserable for us. There was a group that of teachers and students who wished we weren't there, period, and agreed with some of the segregationists. And then there was that silent majority, too, that just kept looking straight and not offering any assistance one way or another.
What you went through is so unfathomable to many of us who will never have to do that, or who piggyback on your acts of bravery then. Is it true what people say, that if you go through a trial by fire like that, that you do emerge stronger, or was there a price to be paid too?
Yeah, you come out I think overall you do. You come out stronger. And I agree, too, that it is a price that you pay. Our parents paid a price. A number of them lost their jobs. So, but at the same time, if you ask me, was it worth it? I would have to say, yes, it was worth it, because we were upholding the law of the land, also the Constitution. We knew we had a right to be there.
We'll go back to the callers now. We've got Nicole joining us from Duluth, Minnesota. Nicole, hi.
Hi. I wanted to say thank you for this opportunity to engage in conversation with you. And I'm really curious, given your historical perspective and experience, can you talk a little bit about what you see in today's society in terms of racial injustice and kind of speak to that, given this wisdom that you have and experience from the past?
Well, I still see that there are unfounded fears of people who are different than you. I still see people who are closed-minded. I also see those who are more open-minded. I have hope that this younger generation will move in a stronger and more positive way than what I experienced. Unfortunately, history continues to repeat itself. As I have said to some high school students that I have spoken to, I was moved by Emmett Till's murder. And today, kids, and still remember it, and remember it well. And our young people today will not forget a Trayvon Martin or a Mike Brown. Because basically it's some of the same things that are going on. So, however, we have a justice system that has improved, and it needs more improvement as far as that goes. But those are the sort of things that I think about in today's society.
Well, last year was the 60th anniversary of the Brown versus the Board of Education decision that ruled separate but equal schooling unconstitutional.
Yes.
And today, reports from UCLA and ProPublica show that schools are resegregating. Now,
yes.
As one of the women on the front lines of desegregation in 1957 and onward, what do you make of that?
Well, I see that as it relates to all the other areas of our society. The resegregation is really about economics is attached to that. People are resegregating or in neighborhoods and so forth because they can't afford whatever area they might want to be in. Why can't they afford the homes or the neighborhoods that they want to be in? Because they don't have the jobs that can afford that. Why is it that they don't have the jobs? Because they're not getting the best education available. Our educational system is broken in many places here in the United States. So we are not number one in the world anymore in educating our children. And I'm despondent over that piece. We are blaming other groups of people who are coming to the United States for taking certain jobs. Well, they're taking them because they are prepared to take them. They are going to universities and learning what's necessary to do what we need. We are not using education as a number one priority in our country anymore, and we need to get back to that.
Now, here in Wisconsin, there are many African Americans and whites living in highly segregated areas who may go a long time, maybe a day, maybe more, without interacting with people who don't look like them.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Milwaukee is one of the most segregated cities in the country. What's your advice to people who aren't used to living their lives with people who don't look like them?
Well, they need to open their minds and hearts and also, take it as a challenge to understand and learn about someone else who does not look like you. Understand their culture. Understand their ethnic background. Understand their language. Not use that as a negative, but use it as a learning tool to understand more about them. Be a part of more dialogue, open dialogue, not so much to be in a confrontational way, but to be open and to learn more about someone else. We can agree to disagree, but in a way that we are learning from each other.
I understand you've got two children now. They have the opportunity to live the rest of the story about civil rights and racial equality in America. What do you want them and others to take away from your story about what you and the rest of the Little Rock Nine did?
Well, I want them to understand how this country was built, whose shoulders they're standing on. We are all standing on various shoulders. And with that, we should take it to the next level of enjoying the American way and all of the things that we have here in our country. I want my kids to be able to do the type of work that they want to do, to be able to buy in any neighborhood that they want. I want them to be competitive in this global society that we live in, and to learn from other people. So I encourage not only my kids, but all other kids that I speak to get all that they can possibly get, because, you know, you can learn as much as we are capable of learning all that we can. And, you know, that is something that no one can take away from you. That piece that you learn in the various schools and educational environments that you're involved in.
Carlotta, thank you so much for joining us today.
It is my pleasure, and thank you for having me on.
We've been speaking with Carlotta Walls Lanier, the youngest member of the Little Rock Nine, the group of students that desegregated Little Rock Central High in 1957. She's also the author of A Mighty Long Way, My Journey to Justice at Little Rock Central High. And she's in Wausau today. She'll be speaking at Wausau East High School tomorrow at 6:30 p.m.